Kentucky, Kentucky, Kentucky. It was an unknown wilderness. It wasn't long before they went into the wide valleys through the Cumberland Gap.
This is Old Kentucky Tales, the only podcast that solemnly swears that none of its participants have ever exhibited a bull within view of a church service. Today's title is Legalese in the 1870s. I am your history pilot, Brent Taylor. To my left is co-pilot Jason Donner. With us today is Jonathan Oliver from the Olson and Oliver Law Firm, a firm which was founded, by the way, strictly for the assonance. It's like alliteration, but with vowels.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like one of your funny words.
It could be a funny word.
Yeah, I know what you're up to.
I'm surprised you knew.
Yeah, it was one of those things I remembered from about seventh grade. In this episode of Old Kentucky Tales, our main event will examine some head-scratching laws from 1873. In our bonus material, we'll listen to a classic political ad just in time for the political season. And along the way, don't forget to support the fake history sponsors who support Old Kentucky Tales. The products are real, only the sponsorship is fake.
Oh, look, I can eat them all. They won't hurt me.
That's because they're made with calumet, and that's why they're pure. Tempting, tasty, wholesome, and that's why they won't hurt any kid. Calumet baking powder.
Some concern there that the baking powder would hurt you?
They were all worried about purity. The big buzzword at that point was purity. And we do know that that is 1917, so that's coming out of the Progressive Era where they were changing the federal laws about having truth in labeling and those kinds of things. So I guess that's part of it. They're playing off some of the older worries about what exactly is in my biscuits. And then also...
Are you running out of ads here, Brent?
No.
You're skimming the bottom of them.
I don't think so, because the thing that caught my eye about this is the thing about encouraging you to eat them all.
Uh-huh.
And I just wondered, maybe, Jonathan, from a legal standpoint, if you were advising this company, would you be worried about saying, hey, yeah, I can eat the whole plate?
In 1917, sure, I think I could go with that. I particularly like the advisement that... won't hurt any kid. I think that's great.
Right, exactly. I mean, something had to go on regularly, like, okay, now this is the one that you can eat more than one of and survive.
Must have been some shady baking powders out there, but this one was going to be okay.
I would mostly worry about the client who says, I don't think we can say that honestly.
Right. So if they stood behind it, you would approve.
I feel better.
All right. Well, I think we are in the clear for that one. And now it's time for the moment we've all been waiting for.
The main event.
Round one. So, guys, we found a 1,000-page book with laws from 1873 in it. And we have narrowed it down to just the very best cuts. And the fun thing about this is that some of them look pretty modern. And then some of them seem like, this is from another planet. I wanted to start with one of the modern ones, and that was there's a law in there, or several laws, about smallpox. And it would start out by saying, every person superintending a hospital or other place where a patient having the smallpox is confined shall prohibit all intercourse therewith of persons not having had the disease. And that's a small thing there about language that just means dealings with back then. So you got to watch out for that.
We know, Brent.
Just to make sure.
We're grown-ups.
So we do need to offer that small disclaimer. And shall, before discharging a patient or suffering him to be removed, take due care that his person is thoroughly cleansed, his clothes, such as have not been infected with the disease, under penalty of $10. So that's interesting. You can have a fine as a nurse there for... not making sure they have clean clothes.
But that was a chunk back then, too, though.
Yeah. $1 in 1873 is kind of like a day's pay for a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
So you could think about maybe being $50, $100, you know, whatever that might be in today's terminology. I usually like to take numbers from back then and put 2 zeros on them.
Okay.
And that normally gets you into the ballpark of how much it would be worth. So that's kind of interesting on that. You're going to hold the nurse liable, so maybe you kind
of. Well, make that sure makes sense, though. Right. Yeah. They want people to not accidentally or deliberately infect people.
Is there anything like that today that you know of where you might charge a medical care professional for, you know, that they're
gotta be.
Sort of,
yeah,
you know, negligence and they're going to pay a fine, something like that?
Well, it's potentially a negligence action, but as far as a fine, that'd be a criminal action.
Yeah.
And honestly, I don't know.
Right. But it would be really weird and strange and rare, though, at least, right?
You would think so in today's world.
Yeah, that's kind of the feeling that I had about it. Yeah, lawsuit would be a different thing.
Right.
But yeah, that's a penalty. If any person who has never had the smallpox shall go into a house where the disease is or associate with a person who is afflicted therewith, any justice of the peace on due proof of that fact may cause such person to be conveyed to some house or place in the county where the disease will not spread. So that's like a quarantine mm-hmm. kind of thing. We saw several things like that in World War I, for example, where they were trying to quarantine the Spanish flu. If any person shall willfully endeavor to spread or propagate the smallpox, he shall be subject to be indicted and fined the sum of $500 or imprisoned for 6 months. So that is, you're actually trying to spread smallpox.
Of course, you've made it
your mission.
It becomes a weapon for some people. I mean, it can be a very serious thing. Sometimes people have known that they had a contagious disease and then not tell people that they came in contact with to infect them. I mean, it's a big deal.
Yeah, so they're definitely mindful of smallpox back then.
You know what this makes me think of? Typhoid Mary. You know about Typhoid Mary? You're thinking about it.
Yeah, that's a really gross one with the cooking.
Well, yeah, I know. But they eventually just put her away and said, you're just going to live in this box forever. Because she was that bad. She was that infecting, right?
Yeah, so they're trying to prevent the a similar situation, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that one makes sense.
It's got to be done. Right.
Right. I mean, these seem pretty modern, pretty reasonable by today's standards, I think. You talk about people who don't want to get vaccinations and, you know, should they be subject to get vaccinations? It's the same kind of stuff that they're talking about.
Then those people are around other people that they have to maybe go to school with. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, in that case, 1873 might be 2013 or something.
Are you a vaxxer, Brent? Are you a vaxxer? Do you vax them or do you anti-vax them?
I get vaccinations and make sure the children get vaccinations.
Of course you do. Yeah.
What about you? Are you?
Of course.
That they're holding out on the vaccinations?
No, of course not. Yes, it's generally a good idea. What? There's no conspiracy there. What are they up to? You know, why would they say, we recommend this, this will help you, this will help you not get the disease that was pretty much eradicated? It makes no sense to me. It never has.
In the mind of a vaxxer,
The anti-vax.
In the mind of one of these vaxxer people.
I'm the vaxxer.
Or the anti-vaxxer.
You're talking about the anti-vaxxer.
Yeah, in the mind of the anti-vaxxer. I think it works like this, that, well, I don't know anybody who's had smallpox, so why should I be vaccinated?
Right, exactly.
It's one of those things, right? You stop taking your prescription medicines because you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
You have the logical sort of circle not being complete.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. There was another one I thought in here was kind of modern, that cities are liable for the actions of a mob. I mean, so I don't know if we've got things like that on the books today, but that sounds like a pretty good rule, right? I mean, you want to stop mobs from destroying storefronts and things like that. You say, hey, the city's on the hook to try to stop it. And maybe they don't stand down.
Yeah, what do they mean by that exactly? I mean, they're going to try at some level to stop it, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to make sure that the city tries to stop it. That they don't just say, oh, well, that's happening. Sorry.
Talking about the police force then.
Yeah. And then the city government who might be directing the police force.
Right.
So I'm down with that one. I think that if those don't exist today, I'd be all for passing one. You know, you see where these mobs get out of control and they start.
You're anti-mobber.
I'm an anti-mobber. I'm going to come out right now today and say I don't like mobs.
I'm thinking about the price tag for the city on that one. I bet they don't agree with you.
Okay.
It's kind of like, I mean, there's an obligation to protect people, but what are they going to pay for everything that the mob does?
Yeah, if they don't stop them.
If it's a matter of just damage, I mean, the people did it. I don't know. I'm going to study on that one, as they might have said back then. Let me study on it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there might be some unintended consequences to making the city liable. I'd be open to reconsidering that one, but I like the feel of it up in the front. I also like this next thing because it deals with toll roads. I mean, the last time I was on a toll road, it didn't seem like there were very many exceptions to it, that you just sort of paid the toll and went. But they had exceptions to toll roads here in 1873. And where it says, the managers of any road in which the state has an interest may permit ministers of the gospel to travel on the road without paying a toll when on ministerial duty, and shall charge no toll against scholars going to or from school. Seems reasonable. Or to any persons who are going to or from their accustomed place of worship. So we've written in some loopholes to the toll road.
Fitting for the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It would have been. Kind of subsidizes the idea of those two things being good generally for society. You don't want to punish people, I guess, for going to school.
Yeah.
Or church.
Yeah, and especially with school, you think.
And you're on a horse back then, you know. So it's like, that's what I'm thinking. It used to throw some dimes in there at 50 miles an hour and try to hit it. But back then, they're on a horse. So you just sort of gallop up and, straighten up, start acting like a preacher and skip out on the toll.
Oh, so you're sensing fraud on this one?
Yeah, I'm sure that occasionally happened. I mean, unless you recognize the guy.
Now, I will tell you that having looked at these laws closely, there are a lot of laws in there about impersonating people. And so, I mean, you could.
Oh, really?
If they caught you, they could definitely throw the book at you if they wanted to.
Mm-hmm. I'm already gone. I'm already like half a mile down.
Remember, you're on a horse.
Well, yeah, I'm like, I'm
you're
galloping away. Like,
I
just decided I'm going to go fast.
Yeah. So I don't know. Now, I do see some problems with that, though. Like,
can I just go around the toll also back then?
I mean, if you're on a horse,
I'm just picturing like everything. You know, my whole frame of reference for the olden days on this show is Little House on the Prairie. So I'm thinking dirt. I'll just go over the hill, just gallop on.
Like a mile around the toll thing, and then get back onto the road. Like past the checkpoint.
I guess people did it in the city and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would be hard to enforce. But I don't know. I think I'm kind of okay with a few exceptions to the toll. Yeah, especially the student thing, because we know students don't have a lot of money.
Get discounts,
students get discounts.
Yeah. Older people get, they start getting discounts.
Yeah.
It's just a nice thing to do, I guess.
It's kind of in that vein of things. Might be harder to enforce, I do agree. So then, though, you get past those kinds of laws, and then you start seeing, well, this is unusual.
Oh, please.
we've got several unusual ones. Bowling, for example, appears to be quite regulated in the 19th century. So a license to keep 9 or 10 pin alley or bowling saloon shall be granted by the county clerk to persons of good character only. So you don't want any bad seeds running the bowling alley. Upon payment of the tax and executing to the Commonwealth a bond with good surety, conditioned that no gaming nor riotous or disorderly conduct shall be allowed upon said alley. So we're going to have a bowling alley license.
But that's kind of how it still feels going into a bowling alley, doesn't it? It's
what,
a little bit
chaos
sketchy
to
in
break
there.
Out at any time.
Well, no, but I don't know. It's a little weird in there sometimes, the right bowling alley. Do you ever go in there when you're like 12 years old and you're looking around like, I don't know about this place. It's dark. There's a bar in here. It was weird.
It is a little unusual that way,
the
right?
The church would take all the kids, the youth group, to bowl. And there would be a bar like right behind us. It was bizarre. Right.
But I'm assuming since it was youth group, you didn't have to pay the toll.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
You get
the
flat rate. Flat rate.
Yeah. I didn't know where I was. I just got in the car.
Something interesting on that is, so bowling was the issue then. Even today, we still have a statute on the books about places of entertainment.
Okay.
And one of the requirements for the permit is that you're a person of good character.
It's the same kind of language.
Okay. Same
kind of
language
that
shows up. And place of entertainment is a place offering intoxicating or non-intoxicating drinks for sale, tourist camp, place of public entertainment where people assemble to eat, drink, dance, bathe, or engage in any other game or amusement. And then it takes a turn because we also include mediums, clairvoyants, soothsayers, palmists, spiritualists, and like activity.
Okay.
So apparently that's our concern today more than bowling.
So we've gone into the occult.
That's right.
In 2019.
So to speak, yeah.
I love that kind of topic. I hadn't thought about that just in terms of, you know, how prevalent that was 100 years ago. So we should talk about that sometime. I like those palmists, those readers.
We should. So does that mean the clairvoyant has to be of good character?
You have to have a permit. Law says no permit shall be issued to a person who is not of good moral character or who will not, in the judgment of the court, obey the laws of the state.
You know what? I love that law because I don't want my clairvoyant to be some kind of fraud.
Exactly.
I want him to be the real deal.
Right.
There seems to be an inherent conflict to me.
Yeah.
So clairvoyant on the weekends. Banker most of the time.
Part-time clairvoyant.
You did my house loan. Now tell me the future.
Will I continue to be able to make my payments?
No.
Yeah, I like to say Brian has the answer.
Have you gone to anything like that? I never have. I don't know.
No, I've always been a little
any situation. I mean, I don't know why I would. I guess if they were kind of just sitting around like in a tent somewhere at some festival, I might do it. But I would never want to just knock on the door and just go in.
Yeah, that's just never been my
scene. It would be kind of a hoot to go do it, though.
You know? Yeah, I mean, I'm not really opposed to it.
It's ridiculous seeing the future.
In a like vein, they were really worried about lotteries in 1873. Now, this was funny because if you go to early 1800 Kentucky history, they were okay with lotteries. They had lotteries that funded roads and all kinds of things. And then in the middle of the century, it was like, oh, wait a minute. Lotteries are bad, and we're going to take them off the books. And then, of course, you know, we came full circle with the lottery to fund education in the 20th century. But at this point, 1873, whoever shall set up, draw, manage, or otherwise promote any lottery for money or other thing, or dispose of or promote the disposing of any money or thing of value by way of lottery, or aid in committing those offenses, shall be fined from $500 to, get this, $10,000. Now, remember, you need to add two zeros to that. $1 million fine for operating some kind of lottery out of the back of your house. What do you think about that, Jonathan? Is that an excessive fine? Is this like an Eighth Amendment kind of issue or what?
It's definitely heavy, and I think you can tell a lot about where the point of emphasis is by what the penalty is. Some of the things we may talk about here in a minute, it's interesting. Some of our fines today are actually less for the same conduct, but this one clearly had their attention.
So I want to jump on that for a second. So the fines are less in like real dollars, like dollar to dollar?
If you do the calculation for what would that translate to back then in today's dollars, adulterating food's the one that comes to my mind.
Okay, good deal. So we'll definitely talk about that. And again, gaming is on their minds. So I like this next section here, or the statute, that says, whoever shall invite, persuade, or otherwise induce another to visit any place where gaming is carried on shall be fined from $50 to $500. And moreover, be responsible to such other and his creditors for whatever he may lose in gaming. So you talk some guy into going to the gambling place. Mm-hmm. He loses $250. You're on the hook for that $250 plus a $500 fine.
Yeah, it's your fault.
I like the part where you're liable to his creditors. I mean, can you imagine?
Oh, right. The bank loaned the guy the $250.
Oh, yeah.
And so now the bank gets the money from you because you talked him into it.
Think of this, though, in like it's 1870, whatever. You know, you got your old saloons, you got your gambling, you got alcohol everywhere. I could see that it might be a good plan. You have the saloon, and I go buddy up with somebody, get him half drunk, ease him into the saloon knowing he's going to be robbed. So I bet things like that happen all the time. So under the guise of friendship, I bring him in to lose all his money. And then they start writing laws because, I see what you're up to now.
Sure. That's a great point, Jason, because these things are, I mean, the way I look at laws is they're usually not preemptive. You're usually reacting to something that's happened.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Someone had to think of that act.
Yeah, and you're they've like, been
wait
doing
a minute.
It. And now you're like, hold on.
Right.
We're going to put a stop to it. Yeah.
I think that probably happened a lot.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we also know in the 19th century that that animals are a big deal. So you're kind of living around animals all the time. There are predatory animals that want to come in and have eat the game or eat the creatures that you're trying to raise. I liked this one. Be it enacted by the General Assembly of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, that every person who shall kill a wolf, red fox, gray fox, or wildcat within this state shall be paid out of the public treasury. For each wolf, $2. Each red fox, $1. Gray fox, the same. And each wildcat, $1.
But did you keep reading?
Well, continue for us.
Oh. Well, it says that that person shall produce the head before the clerk of the county court.
Well, you got to have proof.
And swear.
It's like you were saying, like some dude's just going to be like, hey, yeah,
right.
I shot me like 5 wildcats out here.
And you could just keep showing up with the same head if you did it right. Or my buddy, you know, where's the head go? And then he brings it and says, I killed this one. People are always up to something. You know?
I don't know the last time you were at our local courthouse, but could you imagine going through security with your wolf head?
I got a bag of them.
That might have raised a red
flag.
You want
me put this through
two.
The scanner?
Right. Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, you'd have to have some proof. They don't want the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, chop the head off.
This is funny. The guard holds it while you go through the metal detector. That's true.
Okay.
Killing a wildcat, though.
Oh, it says the clerk shall forthwith destroy the head.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So you're not going to just keep it in a head repository somewhere.
Yeah, keep bringing back the head.
Okay. All right. And then we all own livestock in the 19th century. Here's one for the bull owners in the audience. If any person shall exhibit or show by riding or leading a stud horse, jack, or bull, or use him in covering within view or hearing of any place of public religious worship during the time that an assemblage of persons are engaged in such worship or assembled for that purpose or dispersing therefrom, so the doors of the church have just opened, he shall be fined not less than 10 nor more than $50.
I suppose you got some theory on this, Brent. Do you?
I don't have any theories, but I just...
Well, what is it about a stud horse or a bull that might offend those emerging from a church?
The key is in the word covering.
Mm-hmm.
So covering in the 18th and 19th century is, I guess, related to the whole reason you have the bull in the first place.
Mm-hmm. That's the word?
Covering, yes.
Yes? Okay, I think I see what they're getting at. Don't let them do that. Right in front of the church.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it. Or else you're going to pay fine.
Yeah.
It also goes on to say that you can't do it in a school zone if you read farther.
So if we go back to this part about laws being reactive, I really wanted to know when that happened.
Yeah, there had to be like some jerk that like waited for Sunday
Fred,
at
for the
noon.
50th time, quit covering your bull in front of the church.
And they're reacting to that. Yeah,
yeah, the women have come
awful.
Out of there and they're screaming and they're covering children's eyes.
Yeah.
And whatever.
Oh, gosh.
It's not that. I mean, it makes sense. I get it, sort of. But you got fields. Fields are next to everything too. If you're
sure,
everybody's got animals, then the church is everywhere. And yeah,
right. So you're just trying to make sure the church and the field can live side by side in harmony. Here's another good one for the cow owner out there. If a butcher or other person shall knowingly sell the flesh of any animal dying otherwise than by slaughter, or slaughtered when diseased, or shall sell the flesh as of one animal, knowing that to be of another species. So here's our 100% meat product.
Okay.
But we didn't tell you, like, here you go.
Oh, right. Like selling something else.
This is beef, but that ain't beef. Or a baker, brewer, distiller, or other person knowingly sell unwholesome bread or drink, he shall be fined by not less than one nor more than $50. And this one is biblical. If you go through in the laws of Deuteronomy and all that, I mean, you'll find that the same kind of thing there. So it's this is a pretty ancient kind of law.
That's a public health thing, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it should be that way.
And I also think one of the surprising things here is the way we kind of teach it in American history, well, until 1906, there were no such laws, but that would be no federal laws. Right. We had them at the state level here in 1873. So
that's, yeah, people think of it that way, like turn of the century, nothing, just no laws, right. No regulation on food, safety, anything.
Yeah, yeah. And so the caveat there is federal regulations.
Law.
Yeah.
And this is even predating at least the number of government agencies we have now. So a lot of these things now are over to the, FDA, USDA, things like that. But what another interesting point we talked about a minute ago, that definition is almost verbatim in our current statutes. This diseased animals or animal which has died otherwise than by slaughter, we still carry that as the definition of adulteration. And then at that point in time, the fine was $10 to $50. Today, the fine is $100 to $500 and up to 30 days in jail. So we've added jail time to it now, but
about the same kind of fine, though.
Roughly. And it depends on the calculation. I Googled, what's an $1873 dollar to a $2019 dollar.
Yeah.
And it came out a little bit less, but
right.
Still, we're basically in the same ballpark of saying, don't do that.
So there's some timeless principles that we've had in the state of Kentucky.
It's interesting, though, that the language stays the same. Like if when mm-hmm. they look at the law and they update, if it's appropriate, makes sense, it's not like they go back and rewrite it.
Right.
That they use the same kind of language 100, 150 years ago.
Yeah, that I think that's interesting, too. I also liked this one. This is a couple of down if you guys are following along here. But it has to do with what happens if you have a church and the congregation decides that they can't get along with each other anymore and we're going to have a splinter group, okay? In case a schism or division shall take place in the society, the trustees shall permit each party to use the church for divine worship as a part of the time proportioned to the member of each party. So I guess you're going to have a morning service and an afternoon service.
I guess so.
But everybody can still use the building.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting sort of way to do this.
I mean, this happens sometimes, but they'll split off, go start another church.
Still a modern problem.
Absolutely,
You'll see, depending on the denomination, when there's a church split, the primary question becomes, who gets the building?
Right, because we help build and fund that building.
Right.
And it's
right.
the same question there.
Right, and our current laws are still struggling with that issue, mm-hmm. depending on the nature of the particular denomination.
Okay, yeah.
And then what do you do once it becomes a problem?
Thinking animals, they can just like, we got to regulate it, yeah.
I think it's one reason the statute books don't get smaller.
Right. Yeah.
That's true. It was only 1,000 pages in 1873, right?
Multiples of that today.
And then a couple of down more, we'll see here about what happens if you have a distillery, but you also want to sell alcohol directly on the premises. Distillers of ardent spirits have the privilege of selling at the distillery any spirits of their own manufacture in quantities not less than a quart, but not to be drunk on the premises. So we're not going to sell a shot. We're not going to sell a glass of it. But you can sell it by the bottle.
But you can't drink it.
Is that what you said? Yeah, right. Sell it by the bottle, but you got to take it home and drink it.
Yeah.
So now I know for a fact that kind of stuff would be legal in 2019 because there's all kinds of places where, hey, you come in and have a wine tasting or this, that, and the other. So that was kind of an unusual kind of, I thought, quirky regulation of alcohol there. Because you might have a bar, and that's okay. But, don't do it at the distillery. That's kind of a weird thing for me.
Because that we have a problem with.
That's a bridge too far. Right, yeah.
Now, Brent,
yeah.
Maybe you've got something on this. I don't know. The very last thing, at least on this page, no license shall be required to keep a house of private entertainment.
Yeah, that sounds like a B&B kind of a thing.
Okay.
I guess that's probably kind of unregulated.
They opened up their houses all the time. I mean, yeah. I guess. Is that what you mean? You think it's really that? It's not public, but what does that mean?
Jonathan, any ideas there?
We still have the statute on place of entertainment.
Okay.
And that we talked about a moment ago. The regulation still says that it has to be a certain type of structure, and the permit's only for that structure. And
okay.
You can't have drunken, disorderly, or boisterous persons, and mm-hmm. goes and on and on. That said, I think I catch your drift, and no comment.
I think you do.
All right, I guess we better pay for some bills around here. Fat people, to reduce your weight, surely use Willard's obesity pills and lose 15 pounds a month. No injury to the health. No interference with business or pleasure. No starving. They build up and improve the general health, beautify the complexion, and leave no wrinkles. Willard Remedy Company from Boston, Massachusetts, selling right here in Kentucky.
Still don't know what's in it, though, do we?
No, at that point, they're not going to be required to tell you.
Right.
So, and, I mean, let's face facts. It's not going to work.
Oh, I used it. It works, as you can tell.
I took my last dose like 20 minutes before the show. Yeah.
Feel great.
Left no wrinkles, that's true.
Every ad we've looked at, it's always promising, you know, increased vitality, beautifies the skin. It's always got, it's got like 12 remedies, 12 promises to go with whatever that particular malady was to begin with.
Yeah, now this just one was a little more targeted at least. The thing I always think about, yeah, though, is the FDA has not reviewed these statements. I mean, totally true in 1893.
And it may not be fair, but I think of CBD oil, which everybody right now is saying cures everything. So.
Right. Oh, right. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, it's a little bit like that. You're right.
It's
It continues.
50 years from now, they're going to be like, they thought CBD oil did that.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It's like, what were they doing? And we're about ready for a little bonus material around here. We have got a classic political ad here for the political season. And let's just have Todd roll it.
My job was to find D. Huddleston and get him back to work. Huddleston was missing big votes on Social Security, the budget, defense, even agriculture. Huddleston was skipping votes but making an extra $50,000 giving speeches. I just missed him when D. skipped votes for his $1,000 Los Angeles speech.
Let's go, boys. We got him now.
I was close at D.'s $2,000 speech in Puerto Rico.
Me to D. Huddleston. Thank you very much. Come on.
We can't find D. Maybe we ought to let him make speeches and switch to Mitch for senator.
That's the hound dog ad. If you look at lists of like all-time political ads, you'll find that on national lists, mm-hmm, and things like that.
And it's a brilliant ad. It's effective, you mean?
Yeah. It makes all sorts of political science top 10 lists, right, and things, okay, like that. Mm-hmm. And that was where Mitch McConnell was first running for office. The incumbent was D. Huddleston. And then the play there is, hey, this guy isn't really doing his job. We can't find him anywhere. Where's the bloodhound? We're going to track him down.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's...
When was that? When was he first
elected? That would have been 84.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. Yeah, uh-huh, for sure.
Yeah.
Long time senator. But he unseated the incumbent in that particular case. It was kind of a shocker. I think it was one of those things where people woke up on the next day and thought, wait, who?
You know, in our minds too, like Mitch McConnell just, you know, Senate. Was he ever elected anything prior to that? What did he do prior to that?
That's a good question. He was really young, so I'm going to guess not a whole lot of other things.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Exactly. You know, it's just like he's always been there.
Yeah, he's been there like 30-some years. So
right,
sure.
So I don't know. He might have been, who knows.
Sort of like the definition of career politician.
Yeah.
Just like always in the Senate, I think. that is true. We have now turned to the final page of this chapter. But it's okay. Old Kentucky Tales never fails to return. You can download even more episodes on iTunes or the NPR One app. If you like what you hear, please leave a review or rate us. If you did not like what you heard, well, that's just too bad. Special thanks to WKMS, our producer Todd Birdsong, our guest Jonathan Oliver, Paducah School of Art and Design, West Kentucky Community and Technical College, and the rest is history.